what gets to be that kind of.
It's better for them.
They can't really.
So, Ed sent me a message.
Our sales officer association is a little bit of a writer.
Good evening. I would like to take a moment to thank the jazz band from Stanley Lake High School under the direction of Chrissy Duran. Quite an impressive jazz performance. Let's call our study session to order. Tonight, I am happy to welcome representatives from our District Accountability Committee who will provide the Board of Education with recommendations on both the 2017-18 District Unified Improvement Plan and the 2018-19 District Budget. We will begin with information on the 2017-18 District Unified Improvement Plan, which is a plan that will be submitted to the Colorado Department of Education. Board End Statement 3 says every student, every school, and the district will have effective learning systems and shared leadership that utilize continuous improvement processes that incorporate problem-solving approaches to reduce or eliminate root causes of student performance challenges. The Colorado Department of Education requires all public school districts and schools to complete an annual unified improvement plan. These improvement plans are designed to identify priority challenges and develop major improvement strategies to meet these needs. The improvement planning process includes a comprehensive analysis of district level data, the root cause analysis to focus on system improvements, and development of an action plan aligned to those priority student performance challenges. Our DAC committee reviewed information over the last several months to reach the recommendations on February 20th to present to our Board of Education. Members of the DUIP subcommittee include Lori Avery, Thomas Doherty, Jill Feldman, Hi Howard, Margaret Lessinger, Melissa Monalski, and Susan Lopez. Dr. Glass, do you have anything that you would like to add as we begin this presentation?
Just our gratitude to all the members of the District Accountability Committee for the time and energy they put into this thoughtful set of recommendations.
Yes, thank you. And so let me say welcome, Mr. Flores, and committee members from the District Accountability Committee. Please begin your presentation. And if you'd like to do introductions across the table, that's fine too, man.
Sure.
Thank you.
Start.
Jim? Go ahead, Jim. You want to start? Okay.
Go ahead.
Yes, my name is Jim Early. I am the DAC chair.
Okay. Margaret Lessinger, vice chair of the DUIP committee.
Carol Eaton in Instructional Data Services at JEFCO.
And I'm Deb Gaducci, and I am the chair of the DUIP.
Matt Flores, Chief Academic Officer, and I just want to continue to extend the gratitude to the great work that this team did. More than a dozen meetings over a couple months to really get down to the deep understanding of what our data tells us and where we go from there. So with that, we'll turn it over to our DAC chair, Mr. Jim Early.
Yep. So firstly, I'd like to thank you, the board, for giving the DAC the opportunity to present our recommendations for the DUIP and then later on for the budget to you. Members of both subcommittees have volunteered hundreds of hours combined to analyze data and to formulate the recommendations to share with you tonight. I'd like to recognize several members of the DUIP subcommittee and district staff who've worked so hard to create these recommendations. First and foremost, DUIP Chair Deb Gaducci for keeping us all on task with great intensity, and then DUIP Vice Chair Margaret Lessinger for depth and experience with data analysis and academic measures, and then all of our staff, Matt Flores and Carol Eaton, Dr. Carol Eaton here. I'd also like to thank the district staff who are accommodating to our request for more data and edits to the various components of the DUIP. From start to end, the subcommittee met over 16 times and presented findings and got feedback from the DAC over the course of 4 months. Indeed, this was a community effort. For the District Unified Improvement Plan, this was the first year of that plan, which means we've identified and developed new priority improvement challenges based on the deep dive through several sources of academic achievement data and performed a full root cause analysis. What we will share with you tonight is an executive summary of our findings and recommendations. In your packet, you should have received additional materials that provided even greater detail about the process, the data, and the rationale for these findings and recommendations. Of particular note, I would like to highlight the prioritized list of action steps, along with their alignment to the JEFCO Generations and strategic plan. For each of these, you will see a cost associated with implementing these steps. Of course, we realize that in these challenging times when funding is stretched, not all of these action steps can be implemented. Consequently, we provide our top recommendations for your review for each priority performance challenge area and for the GT addendum. And with that, we'll go into, these are the members of our DAC DUIP subcommittee, and I really appreciate the immense effort that they put into this work, both from our from the district staff and from the DAC itself. On February 20th, 2018, the DAC unanimously approved the DUIP as presented to you. In addition to that, we also unanimously approved the JEFCO Gifted and Talented Addendum, which is provided as well. So since this is year one of the Unified Improvement Planning process, our process starts from the very beginning where we start gathering and organizing all of our data from all of the academic data sources that we have. And then we start reviewing and all of those and putting them into a performance summary. And we identify all of those notable trends in the data. After that, we start prioritizing those into those priority performance challenges and then identifying the root causes that go along with those. And then we begin the next process where we start setting performance targets and identifying the major improvement strategies. And then as we go forward, we'll start identifying interim measures and identifying implementation benchmarks that we can use to measure our recommendations to you. Okay. And with that, I'd like to introduce Margaret Lessinger, who will talk about the data.
Yeah, I'm going to show just a few examples in the summary of some of the data that we looked at in coming up with this DUIP. You have all this data in your data packet. The first slide shows third through sixth grade ELA, and what we're showing is persistent achievement gaps between children who qualify for free and reduced lunch and those who do not. And so looking at subgroups was really an important part of our data analysis and this process. Okay, next slide. Next slide shows actually third through 10th grade math, CMAS math achievement. And what you can see is from sixth grade to seventh grade, there is a drop. And there's another drop at eighth grade. What we chose this year to focus on seventh grade because eighth grade math is actually not very representative of other districts in Colorado and the state of Colorado, because in JEFCO, eighth graders take algebra and geometry and other higher levels of math. So we chose to focus on the drop from sixth to seventh grade in math because it's most consistent from year to year and with other districts. Next slide. For high school college readiness, this is a graph showing the Colorado PSAT results. It's a benchmark for college readiness by the college that's devised by the College Board. And what you can see is that about three quarters of JEFCO's students meet the benchmark for college readiness in evidence-based reading and writing, essentially English language arts. However, they do not, that many kids do not meet the benchmarks for math or for both measures. It is a priority within the JEFCO district that all students meet this benchmark. And now I'm going to pass it on to Dr. Carol Eaton, who will start looking at discussing priority performance challenges.
So those three graphs showed you just a tip of the iceberg of the kind of data that the DAC subcommittee looked at. There was lots of information. Some of it is in the data narrative that's attached to the board presentation. But what we did is we looked at all of the performance data. We looked at perception data. We looked at last year's targets on the District Unified Improvement Plan to see how we did on those targets and narrowed it down into what the next step in the UIP requires is What are the challenges you want to focus on? Out of all that data, what do you want to prioritize as the most important areas that we want to focus on for our improvement planning? And what we ended up with were these three challenges. One is around inequitable early literacy resources and support. The second was around inequitable resources and support for strong mathematical foundations. And the last was talking about that limited capacity for differentiation to engage our secondary students in their learning to be post-secondary workforce ready. So then the next step in the process is, after determining what those priority challenges are, we want to move into, what are we going to do about it? What are our improvement strategies to make a difference around those challenges? And these are the three areas. What I will say about this is the close alignment with the strategic plan and our vision. So when we're thinking about our district unified improvement plan and how we're going to improve, we wanted to make sure as staff in the DAC that we were aligning to our strategic plan. And that's what you'll see here as a tight link. When we think about early literacy, middle level mathematical reasoning, and that career and college readiness, the approaches were around equity, equitable resources and support, the high expectations, that alignment to those high expectations, and then finally that authentic task, the real world task that engages students and they see its application, and not just academic kind of studies, but actually doing the work that they see matters when they graduate. So those were the three areas that we prioritized around improvement strategies. Now I'll turn it over to Matt Flores.
Thank you, Carol. To build a little on what Dr. Eaton was saying, it's important for us to think about our strategic work as a district because it's a reflection of the values and beliefs of our community, our teachers, our staff, and of course our students. In addition to what Dr. Eaton said about the specific tactics, I would also add the professional model of teaching. Some of the recommendations that you'll see coming from our DAC-DUIP subcommittee tonight include training opportunities for teachers in addition to resources for students. We have priority recommendations in English language arts, math, career and college readiness, and of course, recommendations to support our gifted and talented students. And now here's Deb Gaducci to tell you a little bit more about our action plan.
I'm really happy with the recommendations that we're presenting to you tonight. And the first one is the early literacy achievement for at-risk students. We're really focusing on the Lucy Calkins reading program. And Matt's going to tell you a little bit more about that. But based on our research, we've determined that that's going to be the best program to put our money in to move the students' scores. And Matt can tell you a little bit more.
So Lucy Calkins is a well-respected professional out of Columbia University and has been a leader in reading strategies for teachers and students for many, many years. Recently, she's put out her units of study that are gaining a lot of traction, not only in Jeffco, but across our country. We currently have 22 schools in Jeffco that have partnered with members of our elementary language arts team to implement Lucy Calkins. We, as of this afternoon, we have another 13 schools who are interested in supporting the learners in their sites with that resource. One of the things that's so exciting about that resource for our classroom colleagues, it's not like we might remember a Basel reader. At the beginning of the year, you start on page one. At the end of the year, you're on page 300. And over the course of the year, you learn everything you need to know about literacy. Lucy Calkins units of study are organized around teacher training when it comes to some of the components of reading, independent reading, guided reading, to really help customize the learning within units to the needs of the students.
The next area would be the middle level mathematical reasoning, and we focused on two areas for you, hopefully, to look at funding. The first one would be the Jeffco Summer of Early Literacy Program, the JCEL, I think is what it's known as, and that would be expanded to include math. The second for the middle school would be to provide training for the middle school teachers with strong mathematical foundations, and it's an actual training program that we're recommending.
So with the Jeffco Summer of Early Literacy, we're actually hoping to change the Jeffco Summer of Early Learning so that it's more inclusive of math. We're excited to offer these opportunities, and part of this comes back to some other conversations we've had at this table. When we think about the foundational skills that our earliest learners need, we want to make sure that kids have an opportunity to go deep into that understanding so that when they transition in the later grades, fourth grade in particular, and then throughout middle school, to application of that learning, the skills that they need to rely on are cemented in what they understand, and they can quickly recall that information. We sometimes find that kids struggle when they can't remember their math facts quickly enough to engage in a long algebraic equation, and that's sometimes where we see them shut down. So including math in our Jeffco Summer of Early Learning will help to build a deep foundation for some of our younger learners. Then with the math training, we want to ensure that our middle school teachers have that strong mathematical support. What we find is that in elementary, teachers have a wide understanding of that developmental continuum, what kids need to learn when it comes to number sense, how they choose to apply that in abstract thinking in fourth grade, and then as they move to middle school, math starts to get more specialized. What we find is that those middle school teachers also need support and training to deepen their, or to broaden their understanding of the developmental continuum of math. And we've organized some trainings this spring and throughout this summer to support middle school teachers in that effort.
Our third action plan item involves our high school students, and that's for the career and college ready. And we're looking at centralized staff to help develop and increase work-based learning and support customized pathways for the students in high school. And Matt's going to, again, tell you a little bit more about that.
Thank you. We've seen the pre-apprenticeship presentation to talk about opportunities that students can have in internships and apprenticeships. I believe it was last week at Green Mountain, we partnered with other districts to learn about combining skills that our kids are learning in math with the building trades. In this day and age in education, the opportunity to apply learning that they get in the content areas into internships, apprenticeships, trades is more and more prevalent. We have dozens of programs already, CTE programs, early childhood pathways, career-wise apprenticeships. We partner with computer science. Lots of local area businesses are wanting to give our students opportunities to learn in that real-world setting. What we're advocating for as a DUIP subcommittee and a district is to increase capacity amongst our staff to make those connections throughout Jeffco. We partner closely with Jeffco Education and Business Alliance, and there's also many of our community members who are eager to gain interns from Jeffco high schools into their schools. Now that is great to think about. When you unpack the details of those partnerships, there's a lot that goes into it. We wanna vet these partners to make sure it's the right place for our kids to work. We wanna ensure that the programming offered in these settings includes connections, explicit connections back to the grade level standards and expectations that kids need to learn. We don't wanna put kids out there to file papers or to do the work that nobody else in the office wants to do. We wanna get our kids roll up their sleeves and have an opportunity to do the work of the internship just as the professionals in that setting. The resource that we're recommending comes to build the staff to make those connections, to ensure it's the right place for kids, and build the pathways to ensure that that experience is a match for Colorado academic standards and their passions as young professionals.
And our final recommendation in our action plan is the GT addendum, and that would be to provide additional mental health support specifically for GT students. And it's important that you note that that's GT students later on, and when the budget committee presents, they have another recommendation regarding mental health supports, but this one is specifically for GT students.
And this was a priority of the DUIP subcommittee, and it's really born out of the foundation that the mental health support helps our GT students to navigate what it means to be a different type of learner. And as these kids have skills and abilities to help them be successful, they also sometimes see the world in a different way. And this mental health support helps these kids to understand who they are as a learner and how their learning style fits in to some of the work they do in our schools. And with that, we would be happy to do our best to answer any questions that you may have.
I have just a couple quick questions. First of all, when it comes to the evidence base for both Lucy Calkins as a reading approach and for strong mathematical foundations, it sounds like you all anticipate growing the Jeffco portfolio of evidence as you monitor these action steps in the DUIP process. Do you have other kind of evidence of its value, or could you provide to the board that kind of information? And then secondary question, how is the expectation that the mental health supports will be delivered to GT students, knowing that 85% of our GT students exist within general ed classrooms, do their learning there?
So the first question, our English language arts team has done some research, partnered with Oakland School District, who has been using Lucy Calkins for a few years and seen some great success. Also partnering with another district in Pennsylvania, I'm sorry, I don't remember it off the top of my head, to learn from their experiences. And yes, we would be happy to provide some of that research to our board in a weekly update. For specifics about how the GT mental health support would be deployed to support a wide range of GT learners, I'd ask Mr. Carroll to help us with that answer.
Good evening. Currently, we have 4 gifted and talented counselors district-wide. We have just over 11,000 identified gifted students. These 4 counselors currently are housed in center programs and then act on a consultancy basis with other schools, much like our GT resource teachers do. So this would move us from a team of 4 to a team of 6. In addition to that, those GT counselors host an annual training for all mental health providers who can come and learn about asynchronous learners, our gifted learners. Certainly, as you as a board heard from our students firsthand at our high school GT center over at Wheat Ridge High School, you heard the urgency of this need to look at mental health supports for our gifted students.
As I understood Amanda's question, which would be mine as well, the percentage of students that are not in those center programs that are still hopefully identified as gifted and talented that are in our other high schools or middle schools that don't have that, are these 2 other professionals then spending more time in those schools than outside of our center program schools, or what's the implementation idea there?
So all 6 together would work with students both in and outside of center programs. Our GT resource teachers are an avenue to leverage additional resources as well. So if a local school who does not have a center works with their GT resource teacher and says, we really need some additional supports for a particular student or a group of students, they can get access to that GT counselor and bring them in for additional support.
Thanks.
So what's the spread of that effort in terms of the age groups, the grades?
So we support kids all the way from kindergarten through 12th grade.
So how could you elaborate on how these 6 people you'd be spreading?
We currently have 4
right.
that we leverage that are housed as far as officing in schools where there are concentrations of students in these GT center programs. So we have 16 of those center programs, so they have 4 schools each that they primarily are serving currently, but they also serve the regular neighborhood schools as well. So they go into those GT center program classrooms and do regular social emotional types of instructional support, and then they serve on a consultancy basis for the other schools, sometimes working with individual families, sometimes working with a teacher around specific strategies, or a psychosocial worker or counselor in another building to build their collective capacity as well.
So there's a quantity difference. You're adding resource here, but is there a qualitative difference to what they're going to be doing?
So, no, it would be an expansion of our ability to provide the same type of support. They're following the same type of work as our social-emotional learning specialists at the middle school level as well, following the nationally recognized CASEL model.
I wanted to move to the elementary reading program that was at least mentioned, and that is the Lucy Calkins reading program. I have heard a little bit about it, and a lot, but I think my question would be, since we have schools that have been using it, do we have schools that have used it long enough for us to evaluate the effectiveness of that program?
We have a few schools in their 2nd or 3rd year of using this, and we have evaluated the effectiveness. They are making gains in this, and moreover, I would say many of the teacher feedback that we receive is they're thrilled with the training. At Wilmot, up in the Evergreen area, teachers carry around the resource as a guide to remind them of the different strategies that they want to use. They're very excited about it from a teacher perspective, and yes, we have seen some gains in their literacy data as well.
It's not a long history, but we have some history and some reason to believe that it could be effective for us.
That is correct.
And can I just quickly ask as a follow-up, is this providing students access with grade-level texts?
Yes. In addition to the training that supports the teachers to kind of understand these instructional approaches, there are text sets. But one thing that's exciting about this resource, it's not all students reading the same text. Many times there's five or six different texts incorporated into the units of study. So it's about understanding informational text and then matching the text to that level for that reader. Then there's common themes across the texts that are selected so that kids can have common conversations regardless of reading different materials that the whole class can engage in, and the teacher can go very deep in guided reading around the content but stay within the theme, which then would be, of course, at the student's level.
Okay. So one of the things that I'm, it sounds like a wonderful program, but I'm also mindful of the fact that if we only, I value deeply that students receive the opportunity to read texts that are at their challenge level. And I also recognize that they'll need the opportunity to access texts that are at the grade level of achievement that we're aiming for all students. So does this program provide that both of those opportunities to students?
Yes, independent reading resources are tied to just like their just-in-time level or the level that the students are at. Mm-hmm. And then some of the shared resources are common to the grade level.
Thank you.
If I could add one thing about the Lucy Calkins units of study, it really pushes on what we're working to do to transform the task. The questions that the small groups engage in and the whole group can engage in are much higher level questions around themes, around concepts, and less rote memorization or recall. What was the color of the flower in the part, you know, the simple recall that we've seen in some of our previous literacy resources. So in addition to being on level for the students' need, in a larger setting, on level for the grade level recommendations, it's pushing critical thinking and many of our Jeffco generation skills in the way kids are asked to engage with the resource.
So the express goal of this is to accelerate the learning of the FRL children so that they can catch up and close that achievement gap. And the research that you told us about, does it suggest that it's successful in closing the gap, not just raising all boats, if you will?
Yes, we believe so, because it's of the targeted resource that comes at the level of the students and the supports that the teacher has as a professional to help them gain access to a broader connection. I would never say that a single resource would be the key to closing any kind of gap for kids. I do believe that building the skill set of our classroom colleagues is a vital component of that.
Okay, so you... Not to press you on it, but I'm going to press you on it. We're not looking for the belief. I want to know, does the research in the two districts you mentioned, does our own internal experience suggest that it actually is helping the educators close the gaps?
So we will target some of the research that we've collected from Oakland and Pennsylvania to answer that question more specifically. I believe the feedback we're getting from teachers is yes, they okay. do feel that tool is helping.
So are you thinking Calkins will be district-wide?
Well, we want to honor kind of that local decision-making, and so we've put it out there as an option. What we are seeing is that the momentum that is being gained, 22 schools now, 13 schools interested, is building across the district. That's nearly half of our elementary schools at this point. A similar experience with our Math Expressions resource that we implemented a few years ago. We had a handful of schools start, other schools expressed interest, and it grew to 93 of our 96 elementary schools. So could I predict this to grow? It seems there's reason to believe that right now. I think, to your point, Mr. Rupert, I believe the proof will be in the pudding. As teachers are feeling more efficacious with this, student scores are increasing as a result of this, yes, I believe that is a possibility.
Okay. I had a few questions. Are you finished, Brad?
With that point, yeah.
Go ahead.
I wanted to raise the strategy about doing the workplace learning in the summers. And, doing rough math, you're looking about roughly 10,000 kids per grade level that we're going to be trying to find spaces for. That's a gargantuan task to try and attract enough businesses that want that kind of influx, and then to screen all those positions for both the security of the student involved and the effectiveness of the experience that they'll be getting. Are we being real about what the resource is going to be to make that work?
Well, and I'm sorry if I misspoke. I don't believe in the additional resource that we're requesting will meet this need for every single student. We're targeting students who are expressing interest in this, and as more kids are expressing interest, we want to build capacity for this. Some of the work that this team will do will create processes, will create pathways, will create common documentation and forms and resources that we can use as this continues to grow, but our target is not to hit the 10,000 mark with this resource next year. Our target will be to increase, absolutely, the number of opportunities available for kids, and in addition, determine to what extent this is working and meeting the needs for the kids. It may be an opportunity for us to come back to this table next year and say, this is working wonderfully, and now we need some more resource, or here's what we've learned, and this is going to account for more opportunity. This isn't to go to scale immediately. We're going to start small and meet the needs of the kids who are requesting this first.
So we've got some schools that are already trying to engage the business community in this kind of thing, right? And so my question, given the time of year we're in, they ought to be ramping up. They ought to be identifying the workplaces. There should be some sort of application process that's at least in design phase so that they're ready to actually have kids in-house during the summer. Is that going on? Are we watching that process?
These opportunities aren't limited to the summer months. These are opportunities that would give students elective credit, sometimes core credit, during the school year. So yes, those opportunities are amping up. We do our, Marna Messer, our Director of Choice Programming, and her team has created a lot of those partnerships and pathways. This is for students who are going to experience that during the school year.
I'll be interested to know the numbers and how we increase it over time.
It's been exciting, and to watch it build momentum, I'll be happy to give you the specific numbers in an update. It is growing, and it is growing not only throughout JEFCO, but across the state and, of course, across the country. We've watched and learned a lot from Denver, who has kind of grown some of these efforts. It's amazing to see how many kids they're able to kind of get involved in these opportunities in partnership with local businesses. I'm also proud to report that we've built a good partnership with Denver. They have a large team devoted to this type of work. And our team has leveraged our relationships and partnerships to learn from their experiences so that we can expand opportunities for JEFCO kids.
Yeah, I can tell you that the business community, if there's one area where the business community would really like to see progress, I think this is probably that area. So I'm glad to see that we're being responsive to it.
Yes.
That's it.
I am wondering if you could speak to a few of your performance challenges. And describe what you mean by inequitable early literacy resources and equitable resources support for strong math foundations and how your action budget recommendations may be addressing these, and do you think they are?
So when we think about inequitable resource support, what we've learned, specifically with our literacy interventionists, who I know you all know a lot about, many times they are absolutely filling the gap that kids have. Sometimes it's helping us to shine a light on the need to support core instruction to a greater depth. So we want to build that first level, that first best first instruction opportunity, so that our kids get it right out of the gate. Focusing on that would provide equity for all students from the onset. We also want to build opportunities to kind of think of tier two. If you don't get it, where do you go from there? That's tier two. And how are we, before going all the way to the intervention, we have to kind of back up and, you know, do some diagnostic to determine where that exactly might be. We want to build some capacity for core instruction, capacity for remediation that isn't as intensive, and still create opportunity for intervention. So last year we talked a lot about literacy interventionists, and I'm so proud of the great work that they've done and its absolute need in JEFCO. An equitable approach would be to build capacity across core, tier two, and of course, intervention.
So an equitable approach would be where the need exists, allocate more monies towards that school?
Exactly, and okay. More monies,
outside
more resources.
Of SBB.
You've heard us talk about the work that many of our colleagues in educational research and design do to go out and plan side by side with teachers to work based on their request, what do they need. Part of our prioritization would be to target schools that we want specifically to organize that support around. We've partnered with our SIET team, our achievement directors, to really understand the needs of those schools, and then we're going to triangulate support in those areas. They would get more intensive services from our team, and some of our schools who are doing very well would get a little less support. Obviously, they have the support of the instructional coach, but we would target some of those resources to the schools of highest need.
Thank you.
I have one clarifying logistical question, because it sounds like a lot of hours and great thinking went into the recommendation, which is it's affirming to hear that it was a unanimous one. When can the board expect to have the district UIP brought back to us for an approval?
So we plan on bringing that back in April for your approval. We wanted to invite an opportunity for dialogue and discussion tonight, and then we'll bring it back on the April agenda.
I just had a comment and a question, Matt, for you. You had highlighted the, and this goes to the Career College Ready as well as the mathematical foundations in middle school. Thank you guys for these recommendations. They're great. But I went to that Green Mountain High School presentation to a lot of math teachers at our high school levels and some math teachers at our middle school levels. And I was just curious, understanding that concept at the high school level was integrating algebra, geometry with real world projects, construction, application, that relevancy and learning, that engagement. And then as I circulated through the tables, some of the middle school math teachers were like, well, what can we do with that? And I recognize that you're looking at foundational training, but that same pathway of, is there that same consideration as you're working on the foundations, which they're still doing in ninth grade and 10th grade, tagging that with a CTE or an elective, for example, pre-engineering. So those kids are having that foundation and that relevancy in eighth grade, seventh grade, eighth grade, as they move into high school. Would that also have some impact on that? I don't know if other areas are modeling that change in that need for mathematical relevancy for our students as well, hitting both of those. And then the other piece of that college readiness that you hit there, the building for Habitat for Humanity is so great that in addition to our math, it's hitting that community connection, that philanthropic arm of what the kids are doing on another level of relevancy. Just thinking the earlier we could start that. I don't know. I don't know if that's a thought process in that middle school foundational training for the middle school teachers, that if that was a request or something that was being considered.
So you're wise to say that our middle school math teachers and all of our middle school teachers are looking for greater opportunities to apply the learning in a variety of settings. A big compliment to Cecily Klein, our director of math and science. Earlier this year, she coordinated thousands of Jeffco middle schoolers to go to the Solar Decathlon, which is an opportunity provided by our federal government where college students build homes, portable homes, they're solar homes, they're very efficient homes, but they go through the entire process of design, build, organization, and then they're evaluated by university representatives, judges throughout the country that came to Stapleton this year to do that. Our middle school math students, in partnership with their science classes, went to that opportunity, helped to give feedback, helped to judge, and connect that back to some of the work that they were doing in school. Those opportunities are less frequent, I would say, in mm-hmm. middle school than they are in high school, but starting to grow. And we see many, many more of our middle school teachers working towards that CTE endorsement okay. so that we have those connections to career and industry.
Great, thanks.
Okay, I certainly want to thank the DAC committee for your hard work. This is not an easy task. I know that some of you will be leaving the table, and I believe, Mr. Early, you will be staying with us for the next presentation. But I want to ask the audience, I know there are several DAC committee members who are in the boardroom tonight. I would like all of you to stand and let us say thank you for the hard work you do on behalf of our school district and our children. Thank you for the UIP presentation. We will now receive the District Accountability Committee recommendation for spending priorities for district funds in the development of the 2018-19 budget from Mr. Dave Johnson, Chair of the Committee, Chair of the Budget Subcommittee. On February 20th, the District Accountability Committee, DAC, reached agreement on its 18-19 budget recommendations for the board. The DAC subcommittee, with members Lori Avery, Victoria Boyd, Tom Doherty, Molly Gibbon, Dave Johnson, Susan Lopez, Nancy McCandless, Greg Sapal, Christina Vigil, Terry Walderman, Lucas Ward, and Dave Wells, worked with district staff and information collected through the School Accountability Committee survey to provide the recommendations that we will receive tonight through the DAC committee. Dr. Glass, anything you'd like to add before we begin this worthwhile presentation?
Just again to thank the members of the DAC for putting together these recommendations, and you'll also hear during the budget presentation how we've worked to weave these into the preliminary budget proposal that you'll hear later.
Thank you, and Mr. Early, please begin.
Yeah, so, and now for the budget recommendation. I just wanna highlight the incredible work from our budget subcommittee chair, Dave Johnson, and his team. And the district finance staff for pulling together this recommendation so quickly. In a normal situation, we would have about another month to assemble, analyze, and define the recommendations presented to you. This was pulled together with a massive effort of the entire budget subcommittee in a few short weeks after the return of the SAC budget surveys on February 9th, along with the DUIP recommendations and cabinet recommendations. I want to give every member of the DAC credit for their commitment, diligence, and attention to the details and our desire to put together a budget recommendation that benefits the entire district. Overall, this was a very yeoman's effort. So, Dave, I'll turn it over to you.
Do we want to do introductions real quick to that? I'm Dave Johnson. I'm the chair of the budget subcommittee and a DAC member.
Christopher Hsu, chief of schools, secondary.
Karen Kwanbeck, chief of schools for elementary.
Nicole Stewart, budget director.
Great, thank you, everybody. And first of all, I would also like to highlight the efforts by the district staff in regards to Kathleen Eskelson, her team, Nicole, and her team in regarding to provide as much information as we could. As Jim had mentioned, we had to kind of cram this in a shorter amount of time, which is fine. It was more based on the materials received in the, you know, SAC surveys, which I believe you have in your packets. And so I'm going to dive right in regards to and jump to our recommendations, then support them with data following. And some of this is kind of repeat in regards to what we discussed in the DUIP recommendations. The DAC's budget priorities recommendations, first of all, were to fund the DUIP. I mean, that's obvious. That is in our charter, and that is something that we are always going to support, or not always, but for the most part. We're going to support the DUIP, but really when we crunch the data, and most of our recommendations are based on that SAC survey, we try not to take out too much personal opinion as far as the DAC is concerned. The main focus in regards to the budget subcommittee is to collect the data from the schools and ascertain what the schools are asking for, and then collect that and make recommendations to you. And so our second recommendation is to strongly advocate and continue and increase district level funding for student behavioral and mental health support. And I'll support that in a few slides a little later. And then increase student-based budgeting funding for school level expenditures. Come on, baby. There we go. I know you know what the SAC survey is, so I don't really need to spend a lot of time on it, but I did want to emphasize that the survey is sent to all schools in the district. 153 schools responded, so we had a tremendous amount of feedback. And one of the things, now that I've been on the budget subcommittee for a couple years, was, you know, who are we getting it back from? Are we getting it back from just principals? Are they just making request lists? Or are the SACs participating? And there's, through the DAC, we have all the articulation area chairs and probably over 30 SAC members. And so there was a big push this year in regards to how we asked the district to provide that information, and basically some push on some administrative staff to make sure that, you know, the request went out that said, you know, put a little effort into this. Don't just, you know, give it lip service and mail it in. There's actually some forethought put into it. And so when we got the results back this year, I'd ask you to look in your packets. There's quite a few slides in regards to how much information was provided by whom at each school level. What we heard really was that not only was the entire SAC participating, but also the principals participated, assistant principals, and then almost every single respondent had some combination of administration, principal, assistant principal, and SAC chair and or SAC. So it was the materials we received back from the SAC surveys, we believe, was a true voice of the schools. And again, with all 153 responding, it's a really good piece of information. We did have it sent out on the 12th, and we received all the information back on the 6th. The district staff provided us with a tremendous amount of information compiled in an excellent fashion, and again, thanks to them for that. This slide is just a snapshot. We could provide you a tremendous amount of data in regards to that. This is just a real overview, high-level look at what the respondents were. There were five categories in regards to the categories of what the spending priorities were: additional staff, instructional resources, educational programming, student support, and teacher support. And obviously, as you can see on the left, additional staff was the number one priority listed on overall. The three colors, you know, you can read the graphs, you know, the darkest being the number one priority. What was sent out was list your top three priorities in regards to what they were. So what we're seeing is obviously, again, you can see additional staff is the number one, instructional resources, and we're going to dive into that a little bit more. And then when you look into the SAC survey, in your packets, you can really identify what those subcategories are. That was another request we made late in the game about a week ago. I said, well, what I want to provide to you is a breakdown of what is additional staff. What are the 12 things they listed? What are the 25 things they listed, and what are the priorities in that? I thought best to just have it put in your packets instead of trying to do this here, since we're trying to maximize our time together. Our number one priority is funding the DUIP. All of these were covered in the DUIP presentation, but one thing that we did do was we had to line items in regards to the cabinet recommendations. So at one point, we had them numbered. So line 17 was summer early literacy, and we were going to draw your attention to that. There were some changes made, so we took the numbers out, but I did want to make note that they are line item recommendations in the cabinet recommendations that correspond with the DUIP recommendations. I can't do that at the moment, so I don't know if that counts, right? So early literacy is the summer early literacy program highlighted in the DUIP program. The middle level math program was the GSEL program to include math. That is line item in the cabinet recommendations also. The career and college ready program, which is the customized pathways program. And the GT addendum, which is to increase the social emotional support piece. So those four line items that they brought out.
Can I clarify then? Does that mean that things like Lucy Calkins or the foundational maths, that's anticipated that schools will opt to fund that through SBB if they want to jump on as a cohort?
Well, I believe that this recommendation in regards to that, we wanted to emphasize that this was our strongest recommendation from a budget subcommittee, which was outlined, which will be outlined in the DUIP presented to you in April.
If I may jump in, and I wish I would have mentioned this earlier, many of the resources identified specifically for the Lucy Calkins resource have been appropriated either out of this year's budget or we've reorganized next year's budget to meet that need.
So this may be either SBB or possibly through, say, English Language Arts departmental dollars.
Yes, more likely the latter, and the schools could supplement dollars. With SBB.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right. That's why we wanted to highlight this specific program, because it would be outside of that, and it is separated out in regards to the cabinet recommendations. Our second recommendation is to increase student behavioral health and mental health support. The SAC surveys clearly indicate that this is one of the strongest emphasized points in regards to what the schools are asking for. In the surveys, I took one slide, and we wanted to show this as an indication of the overall responses from all schools. So what this graph indicates is the school level spending priorities listed as best we could break it down. And as you can see, approximately the fifth or sixth one down, I didn't count it, is behavioral health support. The dark green is second only to additional classroom teachers. It is the number one line item as far as the most requested item by all schools overall. And so that was about the only slide that I believe showed a strong picture that the feedback we received and why we make this as a strong recommendation is it is by far the number one recommendation by all schools, elementary, middle, and high schools. I'll show in a second here. Any questions on that before we move on? It's kind of a confusing little thing.
Well, since you asked, one thing that I noticed by its absence was that for the first time in quite some time now, we're not talking about educator compensation. That didn't appear to get asked about. But we seem to have traded places for the number of teachers, additional classroom teachers.
That's right.
As the big request rather than
individual
compensation.
Yeah, and I think I might be able to touch on these next couple slides. Additional staff was the category that was the number one request as far as a major category. I believe that last year, and thanks to the hard work of the board and the district overall, the compensation issue was addressed. And so we supported that last year, and so we didn't feel the necessary need to emphasize it as a question on the SAC survey since it was our priority last year. It was our number one recommendation last year, which was addressed, right?
So it wasn't a question on the survey? Okay.
So I'm trying to, in regards to is compensation?
Yes. That's okay.
No, that's a great question.
Well, I'm going to jump in. I might defer to Amy Weber, but the survey was really to get at how are schools thinking about their budget, their SPB
right.
budget, which compensation wouldn't be part of that. And I'll defer to Amy.
I may add, just in my 20-plus years working in education, educator compensation is always an issue in a program.
Right. Yeah, so we just skipped it. We just assumed they checked that box, right?
Well, and I think this was the case last year as well.
And it was, right.
Because SBB utilizes an average so that we're not giving principals or school leadership a reason to disincentivize keeping great teachers over the long haul, which is the right step. So it's important to clarify that this isn't saying, no more dollars are needed,
right,
but a recognition that we really protect our values from disincentivizing honoring our long-term great teachers.
Yes.
I am interested to know if, I understand ad teachers is, you know, way up there on the priority list. I'm reading the graph. From the surveys, did you get any insight into what that means in general? Or maybe let me ask the question differently. What would you think is the objective that they want us to attain by adding teachers? What's driving that?
Absolutely, and I think what I'll do is I'll continue, and the school-based budgeting in the next three slides might address your question.
Thank you.
That's what I get for opening the floor before I was done. Learn, live, and learn. Right, that's right. Okay. Our third recommendation is to increase student-based budgeting funding because, again, as it's already been addressed, we believe that the results clearly indicate maintaining and increasing the funding from an SBB point of view can reach the top priority areas, which addresses that first concern. So what I did was I put three slides in, and one of the things the last couple years that as we crunched the data, because of the disparity in regards to elementary, middle, and high schools, some of the data got drowned out. We didn't hear some of the priorities. The high school principals always complained that their voices weren't being heard. And so what we asked this year, and we broke it out in regards to how this was being separated. So I think your question might be addressed in regards to that as we look at this. The elementary spending priorities, number one, was additional staff. And then they broke it down in regards to not only additional classroom teachers, but instructional coaches.
Okay.
Their second line item was student support, specifically around mental and behavioral health. And then third being the educational program, which was the full-day kindergarten, which was by far the number one line item as far as the third data. And it breaks down in regards to some of that. The middle school breakdown in regards to their request was instructional resources, technology, and then math interventionists, which was, again, it falls in both categories where it can also be looked at as instructional resources, but also additional staff, the intervention position. Additional staff being the number two, but also additional classroom teachers, which was what they light itemed out, and then number three being educational programming, specifically specials, as they like to call them, right? And then the high school priorities instructional resources specific lists, they broke down. So the high schools line item their own specific needs. Again, the emphasis being school-based budgeting, allowing those schools to hit their demographic need, their geographic need, whatever those specific school-based budgets were most emphasized being. And then, of course, what we see on all three of them, the number, you know, number two being the student support, specifically around mental and behavioral health support. Additional resources for at-risk students. If I went back to that slide that breaks all those downs, if you combined all those, the at-risk students and the mental and behavioral health, it knocks it almost equal to additional classroom teachers. And again, I could have deluged you with data, but I think you guys get the point, right? And so basically that is our recommendation. And in conclusion, those three items specifically around what was described in the DUIP and what you'll see in the cabinet recommendations as line itemed, specifically increasing behavioral health and support, and also increasing school-based budgeting is the DAC's recommendation regarding the budget.
I have one clarifying question about the third recommendation regarding student-based budgeting. You all are recommending that we increase direct dollars to schools. Is there a recommendation, I'm thinking back to your DUIP, fund that, any recommendation that SBB, are you talking base funding? Are you talking that $650 per FRL kid? Or is it really at this point just base funding for all schools?
I believe the answer to your question is cash. Yes, the overall school-based budgeting,
cash
line item would be increased overall.
The base is what you're recommending.
Thank you.
Right. The base would allow schools to make the decisions based on how they've already prioritized their budget. That's the benefit of it.
I was interested. I'm glad you separated out the elementary, middle, high school, because I thought some of that was instructive. One of the things that I noticed was that the elementary schools, they want to fully fund the full day kindergarten, and I'm guessing that that's because they're spending a lot of their SBB dollars now to achieve that. Is that a correct assumption?
It depends on the school, and I'll defer to Nicole on this question too, but it depends how many full day kindergarten kids they have, that are being funded by families versus if it's an FRL school and they've got a lot of, if they have to fund it that way.
Well, I can tell you a lot, most of my schools are on that end, and so they tend to be spending a lot of their SBB dollars to make that available because, frankly, it's an investment in their futures at that school to make it available.
We do fund the kindergarten through SBB at a 1.0, so they get the full funding, which we don't get from the state.
Right.
But each of those sites that have the high free and reduced, they get that $650 per student that can help with the kindergarten. I think what you're seeing is some schools also want to have additional help because their articulation areas have chosen to waive the kindergarten fee to make sure they're not competing with each other. And I think that's what's happening as well with that request.
Yeah. Well, so what I want to acknowledge as one of the tensions within SBB is that first of all, thank you. The fact that our district says our kindergarten students are whole people and funds it at 1.0 is the right thing to do. So thank you. I do also want to recognize that within the SBB model, those schools that can rely upon more families paying for their child to access full day have flexible dollars, whereas our schools that are providing it either as a school choice or an articulation area choice are having to take those dollars from that SBB budget. So it's one of those sticky widgets when it comes to navigating SBB in a way that is both adequate and equitable, which for me, what stands out is that we're seeing schools ask for essential things. None of this is fluff. What are they looking for? What is their number one priority at all? Additional classroom teachers, which is just astounding that the most fundamental thing we need to provide to schools is the number one thing that they're saying. We got to prioritize this, otherwise we don't think we'll hit the levels we need. But it's a sticky widget. And I do want to acknowledge that FRL is $650 per kid per year, but a paying kindergarten family is $3,000 per year. Whether that's a revenue or a deficit to your budget, that's a big deal.
Other comments? I would like to acknowledge that had I waited to ask my question until you showed the next two slides, I would not have needed to ask it. You were absolutely correct, and they did clarify it for me. So I would like to thank all of you, especially Mr. Johnson, for your work on budget. The recommendations that you bring forward really come from the ground level in our schools. You made that point pretty clearly. And this is the beginning of a process that informs our board about how to make difficult decisions related to allocating finite resources with infinite needs. And so I really appreciate the work that you've done. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think not. I'm thinking we get through honors and recognition. Can you live with that? We, as a board, we would normally take a break between our study session and beginning of our regular session. However, I note that we are doing some honors and recognition presentations this evening, and I've been watching our citizens and students and teachers come into the room. So I think instead what we'll do is we'll take a break right after we do honors and recognition. The first part of the agenda we can move through. So at this time, I would like to call this meeting to order. I'd like to report to our audience that the Board of Education just completed a study session with members of our District Accountability Committee. Most of you were here for that. And they provided us with information about the District Unified Improvement Plan and budget priorities for next year. We were blessed to have a jazz band performance before the study session by the students from Stanley Lake High School. They were superb. Go Gators. Okay, Brett. We would like to welcome the audience that's with us tonight. Your attendance is appreciated. We look forward to respectful discourse in the boardroom as we engage in tonight's work. And then at this time, I would ask you to please stand and join us in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag Thank you. Board members, is there a motion to approve tonight's meeting agenda?
Mr. Mitchell, I move that the Board of Education approves the agenda for the regular business meeting of March 1st, 2018, as presented.
Thank you. Second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call, please. Ms. Frigo?
Ms. Harmon?
Here.
Ms. LaSalle?
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell?
Yes.
Mr.
Yes.
Rupert?
Yes.
Ms. Stevens?
Yes.
I think it's safe to say that all board members are in attendance at this time.
You didn't take attendance, right?
And we have approved, the agenda for the
evening. That was very
okay, I was covering it all.
Yeah, we covered it all, Susan.
Hearing yes.
I'm hearing yes.
Did we do? Okay, then we're good. Honors and recognition is always one of our favorite parts of this of our board's agenda, and we do have some very special awards to present tonight and some guests with us. So at this time, we'll start with Ms. Harmon.
We need to invite everyone in.
And yes, we'd like to have the Green Mountain High School. They're out in the lobby.
So I see we need to
there
tell everyone
the Green
to come
Mountain
in.
Team,
yeah, get them all in here.
It's Wheat Ridge.
It's Wheat Ridge. So I'd agree.
The farmers.
Tell all the kids to come in.
Bring them all in. We want the Rams and the Farmers and the Gators and everybody.
Oh. They thought we were taking a break, see?
I understand that. Well, we fooled them.
Because I still don't see my group yet.
Thank you. I'll let you go when you think they're in, Susan.
Man, there's a lot of people.
Yeah. I didn't realize there were that many.
That's true. And just to save some time, the Green Mountain athletes are going to be the first people recognized this evening, so you're going to go sit down and then get back up here. But I think everyone's in. You ready?
I'm ready.
So this evening, I am pleased to recognize Jeffco student athletes from Green Mountain High School for achieving the Les Schwab Academic Team Championship Award. So I'd like to welcome the team members from Green Mountain's cross country boys and girls teams and their coach to please come up to the front of the boardroom. And that includes Clint Boston and anyone else who is here for that program. Please come on up. So these cross-country teams, both coached by Clint Boston, claimed the Colorado High School Activities Association Les Schwab Academic Team Championship Award for the fall 2017 season. And this is just incredible. The award goes to teams with the highest collective GPA in their respective sport. Eligible teams must have a minimum of a 3.5 cumulative GPA, and team members must participate at the varsity level at least 75% of the time. So what's incredible is Green Mountain boys cross-country team had a collective 4.2 GPA to win the Class 4A boys cross-country honor for the third year in a row. And the Rams girls cross country team also had a collective GPA of 4.2 to take the Class 4A girls cross country honor for the second straight year in a row.
All right.
So I can tell you that Clint Boston is so incredibly proud, as is Green Mountain High School, for your dedication, your accomplishments, and your achievements. You should be so proud of yourselves. So we know that this is quite the honor. And so tonight we want to congratulate you on this impressive accomplishment. Thank you so much.
Tonight, I have the pleasure of recognizing Wheat Ridge High School's POM team for their 4A state championship team. Would Coach Caitlin Orms and the team members please come to the front of the boardroom? This POMS team is comprised of 13 young women. Their five senior captains helped lead the team to winning their second consecutive 4A POM State Championship. They won their first Jeffco League title this past fall as well. The team practices 2 hours a day, starting in May, straight through March of the following year. They arguably have the longest season full of practices. They engage in conditioning, team technique, outside dance training, community outreach, on top of supporting the other athletic teams at Wheat Ridge each week. All of this while maintaining excellent grades and jobs. They competed in several different competitions throughout the season and qualified for the National Dance Team Championship in Orlando, Florida, held at the beginning of February. Please join me in a round of applause for their superb finish, making Jeffco proud once again of their accomplishments.
Yeah, do something.
See, you're used to doing
do
this.
Do a tower.
Allie will go on top.
Yeah.
Like it, thank you.
Do a tower.
No.
She's got someone up in the air.
I got her. Go Farmers, well done.
Now I believe Mr. Rupert.
I have the pleasure of introducing the wrestling state champions, Pomona and Lakewood High Schools. We've got some exciting wrestling results to recognize tonight with the Pomona and Lakewood High School wrestling teams and their coaches. Join us at the front of the boardroom if you're here. Excellent. That doesn't look like a team to me. All right, well, we're gonna go with this anyway. Let's begin with Pomona. Pomona High School juniors, Theris Robeson and Colton, and here we go, Yapujian. How'd I do? Pretty good, I hope. Each claimed individual state wrestling titles February 17th at the Pepsi Center in Denver. Theris became a three-time individual state champion in the class 5A 132-pound championship bout. He also has a chance to join the exclusive club of four-time state champions next year. Just 21 wrestlers in Colorado have ever won four individual state titles through the history of state wrestling in Colorado. Colton became a two-time individual state champion with a 5-4 victory in the Class 5A 138-pound title bout. These individual titles helped Pomona claim second in the team standings. Coach Sam Federico has coached the Panthers to either first or second in the 5A team standings at the state tournament for 8 straight seasons. At the same level, or same event, Lakewood High School senior Gabe Danette made history. Gabe, all right, there you go. Gabe became the first three-time individual state wrestling champion from Lakewood High School. He wrapped up his stellar prep career with a 9-8 in the 5A 160-pound title bout. Gabe will wrestle at Stanford University next year. So give these folks an award-winning round of applause.
I believe next will be Ms. Stevens.
So can I invite the Devlin and Chatfield swimmers up to the front if they're here today? Yay. And while they come, I just want to let you all know that I'm continuing with sports recognitions. We're going to take this time to recognize these swimming champions. So Devlin Junior Senior High School Senior Abby Celine and Chatfield High School Freshman Catherine Chanley and their respective coaches, if they're here, can come up front as well. Abby Celine, coached by Mark Collings, won the 500 and 200-yard freestyle events at the Class 3A Girls Swimming and Diving State Championships February 9 at the Veterans Memorial Aquatic Center in Thornton. Her winning time in the 200 freestyle was 1 minute 53.04 seconds. Abby's 500 freestyle time of 5 minutes 4.87 seconds successfully allowed her to defend her title. She will swim at the University of Wisconsin next school year. Congratulations. Wyoming, University of Wyoming. Thank you. And Chatfield Senior High School freshman Catherine Chanley, coached by Ronald Johns, burst onto the Class 5A girls swimming stage this winter. As a freshman, her time of 5 minutes, 2.44 seconds in the 500 freestyle final won her the event title. This freshman phenom also placed second in the 200 freestyle final February 10 at Eudora Pool Ice Center in Fort Collins. So please help me congratulate these accomplished swimmers for their impressive showing in making Jeffco proud.
Next, we are going to recognize a new and unique group of people to present this award, our superintendent, Dr. Jason Glass.
Thank you, Mr. President. Tonight, I have the special privilege of recognizing the graduating inaugural class of Jeffco University. This was the first year for Jeffco University, and these interested citizens committed to attending five sessions held in October through February in locations all across our district. We had a mix of both families and community members sign up to attend these classes, and demand was impressive as we had to cut it down to only 50 attendees. These participants learned about the state of education today, district systems around teaching, logistics, supporting students, and community connections. An impressive amount of information was shared by district leaders about and our students engaged in robust dialogue, and they asked fantastic questions. I think we all learned from each other through this adventure, and I look forward to providing additional opportunities for Jeffco University in the future. I know we have a couple of participants that were willing to come up and talk about their experience a little bit. Can I have Neil Charles and Carrie Zanetti come up? Thank you. You guys come up to the microphone here. And just tell us, what did you think of this experience and what did you find most valuable?
All right, now you can hear me?
Yes. Okay,
we're good? All right.
I'm going to respectfully ask you to start over again, please.
Okay, and I'll try and be slower. I'm just a little nervous. I am a Jeffco educator, but I came into Jeffco 4 years ago after teaching in another state for 11 years, and I naively believed things would be true in Jeffco that I knew from my past experience. So Jeffco University really just gave me this really nice foundation of filling in some holes of how Jeffco works that I've been trying to figure out for the past 4 years. It also made me a better future parent. My kids are not in school yet. They're 2.5. But I really loved session number 3 when we talked about the budget was there, and we were at the transportation center and there was security. For me, I was reminded of when you voted on Dr. Glass and you kept saying, right the ship. And that presentation just made me feel how enormous the ship is. And I felt like, you know what, I've been on the entertainment deck for the past 4 years, and here we're looking at how this ship really runs.
Welcome to steerage.
But these people are making it work. And as a parent, I am really just grateful for the opportunity to see how you're keeping the lights on in our schools, how what it takes to clear the snow off the sidewalks, and how you're keeping our kids safe.
Thank you. So I came in, absolutely. I came in with a very different perspective. The accent may give it away, but I know nothing. I said at the opening session that I don't even know what a sophomore and a freshman are. I'm not sure I still do, but I know about a million other things that I never thought I needed to know. I'm just at the start of a 20-year relationship with Jeffco Schools. I've got one first grader and one 4-year-old girl who wishes she was a first grader. I think the opportunity that we were given must be repeated. I think it's incredibly valuable, and I'm certain that what you've created is 50 incredibly strong advocates for Jeffco Schools, because as coming from the business world, I could not be more impressed about how much you managed to deliver with so little. Simple things around budget funding just will always stick with me. If you underfunded a business by 10% for 8 years, you wouldn't have a business. And yet you're asked to do more continually, and I think you've got an excellent team, because the passion that came across from everyone who spoke to us was just inspiring. It was really impressive, and I think as citizens, if we continue to engage, I think we've got a bright future ahead of us, and we'll have more of these presentations where you can recognize these kids for doing wonderful things. It's great.
Thank you.
If you are a Jeffco U graduate, could you please stand and be recognized? And come on up. I think we're gonna take a picture with you guys. So come on up. We're gonna take a picture with the Jeffco U grad folks. So come on up. Thank you.
Where's the tassel?
These are for you and Brad.
Oh. I already have some. Did Dr. Glass get some?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for your time, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Really?
Oh, we're going down there, huh?
Yep.
Okay.
OCD, could we move the banner down one person so that it would be more in the middle? Thank you. Yes, thank you. I feel much better. Okay. Get a little closer.
Is your socks from the active
from
Green Mountain?
Okay.
All right. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. We'll inspire you. Go run that.
I would like to say that the Jeffco University was indeed an exciting experiment for us, and I think obviously successful, and something that I personally hope we'll be able to continue as we communicate with our constituents. We are now going to take a short break, and you are going to witness an unusual event, and I guess I'm going to do executive privilege here and tell you how it occurred. We have with us tonight two of our students from Green Mountain High School who tried to sign up to speak to the board tonight and had a little computer trouble and didn't get signed up.
Golden High School.
Oh, Golden. Yeah. Oh, I thought it was GM. Okay, Golden. And so they actually asked if there was any way that, you know, we could actually let them speak to the board, and I decided not to violate our protocol. So during this break, we are going to do very quick 2-2-1 meetings with the two young women from Golden High School. They're going to address two board members and then two more, and then Dr. Glass and I, and we will try to listen to whatever their message is, but I could not allow them in good conscience to address the board publicly because they weren't signed up. So that's what you'll be watching happening at the first part of this break. Thanks for your understanding. We'll reconvene this meeting in 10 minutes.